This is Steve Schrock on another Franklin Matters radio show. This year is part three of my conversation with Frank Falvey of Frank Presents, a longtime Franklin resident and cable show host. This is part of the three-part series on the town charter, the process to change it, and some of the possible revisions that Frank and I discussed over the course of three parts. Links to the current town charter, modified in 2013, and the charter report for 1995, the prior changes, are included in the show notes. The recording runs about 40 minutes, so let's listen to this conversation of Frank and I talking about the charter. So Steve Schrock for Franklin Matters here again in the studio with Frank Falvey. Frank, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well for this day and time of year that, you know, it's after Thanksgiving.
Yep.
And it's before December 25th.
Yes.
You know, a wonderful seasonal, and Franklin really knows how to celebrate, don't they, Steve?
There's a lot happening, that's for sure, yes. Between the concerts on the Common, hosting the Santa, and the menorah lighting on the Common, there's lots of things going on. I've been getting the notifications from the various churches around their celebrations that are being held here and there and elsewhere, and there's a lot going on.
There certainly is.
Yeah. Indeed. So for those who had not listened to part one or part two, we'll give a brief recap. Frank and I started coming out after the election and our meeting at that night to broadcast the election results. We decided we'd have a conversation around the charter, the town charter, which is effectively the constitutional doc that gives us, in more specific terms, the home rule charter, how we rule ourselves. And we've talked about some of the changes in the process. Most of part two went into further details here and there. We had a long and winding road and a good conversation. And today we want to try and see if we can wrap this up. We'll see how it goes. I don't want to be too overcommittal as to what's going to happen, but we're open. We're going to have a conversation. So I think we've touched on a couple of the topics before, and we hadn't really gone back too much. So that's one of the things I wanted to at least start with here. So I think we talked about town council and school committee kind of having staggered terms, if possible.
Yeah, which I'm opposed to. And I think it's a great topic, and always is a topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, staggered terms, the length of terms. But I'm a believer that if every 2 years all the councilors should be up, there's no reason that we have to have a staggered term particularly. And if the people that are going to the polls really feel that they need a complete changeover of individuals for whatever reason it is happening, that's democracy. Let's let them vote them out, all of them. It's never happened. I mean, it's come close. I think maybe a couple of years ago we had, five of the school committee out of the seven new people?
Well, I think at that time it was more, not so much that the people voted everybody out, it was the individuals decided not to rerun,
right,
which also occurred in this past one where individuals did not decide to rerun. And at least from hearing from others who knew more of the Franklin history, in the late 1990s, 97, 99, something like that, they did at least once wipe out a group, whether it was the council or school committee. I never got to that level of detail. My set of the annual reports, which is my guidance in terms of the town history, doesn't go back that far. So at some point in time, I'll find some time and spend some time in the library or the town clerk's office and read a year at a time to get back into those details.
But that is another good reason that everyone should be voted on at the same time, is because individuals, maybe after 2 years, maybe after 4 years, want to run. Want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Leave the position. If we have staggered terms, we might be creating another situation that a person will leave in the middle of their term, and then we can now or later in the show talk about how they then would be replaced.
Right. Yeah, replacement but, would be a separate issue for sure.
But
yeah.
Right now, let's talk about the staggered terms. I think all of the positions, planning board that does have a staggered term, the Board of Health, the Board of Assessors, I'd rather have them all come up every time and let's see what the issues are and let's give other people a chance to run for those positions instead of just kind of having one hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Let them all hang out. I mean, they're a body. They're acting as a group. They're acting as a body. How that body is operating together with one another influences what they do. I'd rather see them all. And, of course, I was never happy that we eliminated the treasurer from an elected position because I always want to see separation of duties. I want to see the treasurer of the town, even though now today it's got to be really more of a professional individual.
Right.
But, you know, Mr. Dacey, the last one that we elected, he went to college, I think, for electrical engineering. I think he went to Northeastern, but turned out to be a fine, outstanding treasurer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he got additional training along the way. And I think bringing up the professionalism, particularly in the treasurer-collector role, and to a certain extent, I would go further on the others, they're much more technical in terms of the domain knowledge required on the Board of Health side, Board of Assessors side, or Planning Board side, respectfully, than within the school committee and within the town council because of the nature of their arrangement. They've got two primary roles, as I see it. One, hiring either the superintendent or the town administrator, and then providing the legislative oversight and all that is, the policies, the laws, the bylaws, et cetera. Everything else within those two operations is determined by the superintendent or town administrator, respectfully. As opposed to in the planning board, Board of Health, Board of Assessors, there's much more technical knowledge because they're into the details. In my early retirement, I tried to attend a Board of Assessors meeting to report back to what happens. Well, coincidentally, it turns out, and most of the meetings are like that, there's about a 15-minute open session, and then the rest of the meeting is executive session because they're going through all the abatement requests, and there's some privacy and respect issues there, and I totally respect that. So I've never been back to a Board of Assessors meeting, which is not to say I haven't been to a Board of Health meeting or a Planning Board meeting. I have been recording a lot of the Board of Health meetings specifically because the time permits that. And health certainly is a big issue. So,
well, the Board of Assessors, I would, first of all, for full disclosure, I have a numerous years appealed my assessment.
Okay.
So as a as people out there listening, and I believe this Board of Assessors has no sympathy for older people that have lived in the houses for a long time and have not repaired them. And they have never, ever, a house that has sold below the assessed value of the home that they've assessed, they have never, ever considered that as a legitimate sale. And so I think there's an interpretation of law that, again, for full disclosure, I disagree with.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And am in concern in their application or their understanding of the application of the state law. So let's move on.
I'm certainly not a legal expert in that realm by any means.
But the Board of Health, I hope that this coronavirus pandemic is not strengthening the U.S. government to interfere in local Board of Health issues. The state governor They all seem to have some sort of legislative power to override the local Board of Health. There might be some validity to that, but I think the power should rest locally as to what the rules in concerns about the health of a community should rest with the local elected and hired officials.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you on that, because based on my observation of the Board of Health and from what I've understood of the Board of Health, specifically in Mass, so I'll confine my requirements to Mass, but Mass and the local boards of health had a plan to deal with a potential pandemic.
Yeah.
And the governor at the time threw that plan out and did his executive order and did it his way, where somewhat okay, some may say. But yeah, that I think is an issue that we're going to have to address at some point. The Board of Health, to that extent, should be a little bit stronger in that regards, which is not to say they have ultimate and overarching power. That's one of the clear delineations. The federal government, to my understanding, only has interstate transit power, but they can't tell individual Board of Health what's to do. And the state, based upon its determination, the challenge that was issued to Governor Baker, the Supreme Judicial Court at least, cited that his executive order policy was okay. So that may have to be postponed till another future opportunity and see if somebody else can challenge it accordingly.
But Steve, why would you like to see the school committee or the town council on staggered?
It's 2 years. It's a question, too, as to whether they would be able to implement rotational on a 2 years. I haven't done the math. I'm just proposing it for a discussion. I think the issue that, and to go back to the one time, maybe something happened and it's decided we want to wipe everybody out. Okay. But I think the town would benefit more by having some of that institutional knowledge carry over. We've been fortunate to the extent that while we have had changes, it hasn't been that significant. So even in the most recent planning board, the other three members who were already elected and their terms had not yet expired, they were able to provide and are able to provide the guidance and assistance to the new two new members who have just replaced the two oldest members, if you will, at least in terms of length of service, to my knowledge. So I think that's a good piece. What would have happened, and it's purely speculation, if we had five brand new members of the planning board? One of the planning board issues, and to my understanding, the development life cycle, in some cases, from the time you've got a concept to the time you start getting permits, et cetera, can be 4 or 5 years. So that's one of the arguments for a four-year term for the planning board, so that at least somebody sitting can follow the plan all the way through the approval cycle, as opposed to for a developer and whatever the engineering firms that are providing the guidance, et cetera, then all of a sudden now they've got to ask or answer a whole new set of people's questions that they've already addressed prior. That would be not a disaster, but it would set us back time-wise in terms of moving forward. So I'm in favor of at least that institutional knowledge piece.
In the 4 years, right, a lot of developers changed their original plan.
In many cases, they changed the plan based upon the feedback. So they keep coming back because they proposed it in this way and it wasn't handling it. So they do change it in order. So to keep those, okay, we changed it for why? We changed it for this reason, so that if something else did change, you don't want to end up in a worse position. Somebody still has to maintain that. So,
which
that
is the professional staff.
And the professional staff can go so far, because then you would still have the new people with all that level of training to get up to speed on a particular project. It's part of the discussion.
One of the new planning board members was an associate member. And we did
true,
not,
in this particular case.
We did not elect. No one ran.
Yes. There was a write-in candidate who did acquire, I believe, 20-plus votes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I was totally unaware of that.
Yeah. It was not known before that there was such a write-in candidate, but somebody at least accumulated 20-plus signatures to validate that role.
And all it took was 20 signatures?
They technically, I think they could have done two or three. It had to be more than one, right? Because if somebody put in Mickey Mouse or Santa Claus, you got to have some valid signatures, and they had 20 valid ones, all with the same spelling of the name. Yeah.
How many signatures would it have required to be on the ballot? I would think you would.
Usually 50, I think, because I think it's for all, it's 50, and then town council, it's 100, if I recall.
Then I wonder if we ought to have a technicality that says you at least have to have the number of votes as it would require to have your name on the ballot.
We'll put that on the list of the things to discuss. Yep. Yeah. To the school committee, while we're on the school committee to that extent, currently there's 7. The workload, I think, to the extent that there's already 9 members on the FinCom, there's already 9 members on the town council, why not add 2 more to the school committee, gets that many more people involved, and helps distribute the committee and subcommittee work better than having it distributed amongst the 7. I think that should be, whether they go rotational and staggered shifts or whatever, I think increasing to 7 to 9 should be a, quote, a winnable argument.
I don't see it. I see eliminating 2 members from the town council and eliminating 2 members from the finance committee.
Ooh.
And going down to 7.
Why?
I think 7, I think 9 is you're getting, first of all, you're getting individuals on the end of the ballot list that either don't have that particular qualifications, don't have that interest. I don't see that 9 are really contributing to the efficiency and the effectiveness. If basically, right, the town council and the school committee have one job, and that's to elect and hire a superintendent of schools and a town manager, why in the world can't 7 people agree on the qualifications? And we don't have a whole lot of people that are highly qualified for these positions running.
Well, we had 12 candidates for 7 positions. We had 12 candidates for 9 positions. We've had them.
But I'm talking about the qualifications of those candidates to be in those positions.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, we've had on the town council and on the school committee over the years some people that just don't even know what's going on or really don't even belong in the meeting. Now, that's a very subjective opinion of mine. But what I'm saying is 7 should be able to do an efficient job. They should be able to present strong enough input and argument,
mm-hmm,
for the issues to be discussed.
And
9 is only taking up time. I mean, maybe with 7, if people, citizens want to speak, maybe they can have more than 3 or 5 minutes to speak, and maybe there can be a number of speakers instead of these 9 people taking up a very short amount of time in the chamber.
Oh, that's weird. Now we're getting into meeting management as opposed to town charter piece.
All right. You're right. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. But I would favor less. I'd favor 9.
Reducing from 9.
Reducing.
Okay.
Instead of enlarging.
That's fine. So if somebody, if both of us get on the future committee, somebody at least would have to break the tie
well,
or present a better argument.
There is someone, well.
Potentially. Not that I'm running for it by any means. We're just discussing. Food for thought.
Did we want to go to how, when someone leaves, how they're replaced?
That's one of the things on my list, yeah, because currently in the town council position, and that's the only one that, to my knowledge, is specified such in the charter, If the town councilor resigns or some other means, heaven forbid, you know, death or something like that. But then the council is required to schedule an election within 90 days. We did have a resignation earlier in 2021, and because the resignation came in within 120 days of a regularly scheduled election, we didn't have to do a special. So those two clauses are in there. Given the cost of an election, in pre-pandemic, it was always talked of like in a $10,000. Given that we've got potentially additional mailings, additional ballots with the early votes, the absentee ballots, et cetera, I would speculate, and even if we call it 15,000 round numbers, call it 20,000, why should we force the town for $20,000 expense to replace somebody on an interim basis? You know, let's come up with some process. And again, this is just an idea for discussion. But as opposed to $20,000, and yes, I truly understand that it is our representative, but we should be able to find some representative who can volunteer until the next time and then save $20,000. We don't have a whole lot of money to frivolously run an election. Heaven forbid we would have, you know, two or three resignations staggered through the year. We could be running three elections during a year, every 90 days.
Well, given that it's only 2 years, I think maybe there is the possibility of considering other options.
Mm-hmm.
One of my concerns would be, though, if someone is elected in within the first 9 months of their term,
right,
they leave voluntarily,
yeah,
not because of health or death or whatever. But, you know, certainly after 9 months or after a year, you're close enough to another election to have some sort of option,
mm-hmm,
to fill the vacancy or go without filling.
Or go without. That's where at least the charter today specifies the 90 days or the 120 if within, right? So, yeah, maybe we change it to 180,
right?
Right. So at least 6 months we've got, we could survive.
Right.
I mean, from a town council perspective, what things are that critical that would really get stopped if it was a 4-4 vote?
Right.
Heaven forbid, we don't know, but that's an option for consideration.
And, you know, if it's that close and that big of an issue, then maybe we really need to wait
for
the
we do.
Public to decide,
sure,
who they want to, yeah, break the tie.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, let's move on to filling
in other elected positions.
I can handle this personally. School committee.
Okay.
I forget how many years ago, but way back.
Way back. Before my time reporting, that's for sure.
There was an opening on the school committee, and I don't know, can't remember why there was an opening, but there was an opening on the school committee. At that time, I had two daughters in the school system. I thought I would like to be a school committee member. I believed I had filmed through the cable access. I had filmed the school committee for 5 years,
mm-hmm,
and had been, in essence, at all the meetings.
Yeah. So you learn a lot that way. That's for sure. I can attest to that, having attended as many meetings as I have.
So I put my name in the hat to run. There was a professor from Dean College, as I recall, that, you know, obviously had an educational background, lived, mm-hmm, here in Franklin, and he put his name in the hat.
Sure.
And then there was someone that I really don't recall much about him, but he was the smart guy. He put his name in the hat, and he called every single town councilor and school committee member because they meet as a body.
As a joint body.
They choose among the people that have submitted resumes and submitted why they want to be on the school committee. He called every one of them, and neither the guy from Dean or myself, we thought, you know, we're going to go before this august body, present our qualifications. Obviously, I was fairly well known, I think, throughout the town. Mm-hmm. And I always think it was my cowboy hat that I never I never got on.
They didn't recognize you without it.
So anyways, that's the process for all of the other boards and agencies except the town council,
right.
Is that the town council and the other boards would meet as a body.
A joint body. Yep.
And whoever got the majority of the vote became the member until the term expires.
The next election.
So, again, yep. We could go back to the assessors. We could go back to the planning board. We could go back to the Board of Health. That could be quite a while.
Those are all 4-year terms,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, they're all 4-year terms.
Yep.
So, and I'd have to read the charter again. Maybe I haven't read that closely. I don't know if they would come up for an election. Next election.
In the off cycle. Well, at least that's what happened with the town clerk. Because the prior clerk, you may recall, resigned.
Right.
And then the acting got appointed. And then at the next local election, and even though the town clerk's term, had she remained, was still going to be for another two full years, she was on the local election ballot. Now, I don't know if that was, again, because of the town clerk role and the uniqueness of that, because that's slightly different from the other roles, because it also has a dotted line into the Secretary of the Commonwealth because of the election processes, et cetera. But I think that's what would happen, is it probably would run up into the next standard town election and get fulfilled then. But that would be something that would be certainly we could look at and see how the circumstances are, walk out the timeline and see if there's an option, if there's some alternatives. I think getting back to the original point is this, given money is tight and money will be tight to the extent that elections are becoming more expensive, let's try and figure out a democratic way to replace somebody on an interim basis rather than spending $20K. So, that's my 2 cents.
What else do we have there, Steve?
I think we've covered the other pieces that were on my short list. As you can see, it was a short list. The only other thing in terms of kind of the wrap would be to get back to things we had started talking about and having learned from the certainly 1995 Charter Commission, who did their work to change us from the select board to the Council of Nine. And then there was a team in 2010 and then another team in 2013 that resulted in the change for the town clerk to remain an elected position, town treasurer and collector to move to an appointed position. And there were some other relatively technical items in that. Coming out of those sessions, there's really kind of a couple of items that would be, I think, required. We talked previously of two ways to do it. You can have a citizens committee or you can have a charter commission. The charter commission was the 1995 effort. They produced a report. The citizens committee was the 2010 one, and they chose not to produce a report. So whichever way we go forward, I would recommend that we at least have a requirement for a report to be produced with the pros and cons behind whatever their recommendations are.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. People have spent that amount of time together, which we hope they did, there should be some sort of report, even if it's a neutral report.
Even if it's neutral, at least give us the analysis to, okay, we did this, we did this. There's no need to change. We should still know that. Yeah. And then, because I think the town certainly abides by the Mass General Law, which requires the report from a committee 18 months. So 18 months, that's a significant amount of time to meet. Even if you meet once a month, you have a public hearing, they're all open meetings anyway. In 18 months, you should be able to come up with something and produce the report. And even if it's, we discussed
five items, and on three of these we say this, and on two of these we wouldn't change. At least we have that as some basis to further the discussion.
You know, one thing that we haven't covered is the length of the terms. The length of the terms are set by the Home Rule
Charter, correct.
Home Rule Charter.
Right.
I myself don't see any need to change the length of the terms,
mm-hmm.
but that would always be an open item. Well, depending on how the which road we go down.
Potentially. Yeah, and I haven't done any of the math in terms of, okay, if we were going to try to do, you know, the staggered terms, and again, that's not a decision, it's more of a discussion point, but there may be an opportunity to, instead of 2 years, there may be more of an easier implementation if we had, call it 3 years or 4 years. I haven't done that analysis. I'm just proposing that somebody would look at that and come back. So in that case, if it made sense to change the term length in order to make that implementation, I'd consider that.
Well, I get a little off the subject, but I do want to acknowledge that you interviewed the town manager. And part of what he said made a lot of sense in that they have to begin looking at the qualifications of the individuals that they hire for certain positions, because they are now dealing with social issues, they're dealing with mental health issues, they're dealing with environmental issues, hopefully they're dealing with the seniors and other people being defrauded over the internet or telephone of substantial amounts of money. So there are issues that a town may not normally think of, but society is putting them forward.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in the school system, I just heard, you know, on this wonderful program that is called...
Toward a More Perfect Union? Is that the one?
A More Perfect Union.
Yep.
If you haven't listened to it, please, Jeff Roy, Dr. Michael Walker-Jones, Peter, the executive director here at the studio, and Dr. Natalie Linus, executive director at Harvard, an epidemiologist, had our superintendent of schools on. And she was going through all the list of social issues that have always been creeping up over the years and over my lifetime.
Sure.
To be really part of the educational system. The educational system is no longer just educating a curriculum or even just choosing a curriculum. So we need to, the town manager, acknowledge that in the hiring, both on the in the superintendent schools of knowledge, that hiring people now today, you also need to look for some special skills that was never even considered when we were putting the charter together.
Yeah, I think in my conversations with Jamie Helen, and I appreciate his taking the time, and effectively we're on a every 2 week cycle to talk Franklin, and I think that was one of the episodes you listened to. Yep. He's been sincere about and consistent with town government, while it is a government entity, is really a service organization. And thereby hiring the right people to provide service, whether it's first responders or working on the sewer lines or cutting grass, they're all in a service orientation world because they're providing us as residents, whether seniors or students or whatever, they're providing the services to us. So, yeah, I agree with his concept and an approach. I think they're going to need to do more of that as we go forward. And that's one of the reasons that I've been talking with him to get these other conversations out there. Because prior to these, where would we have heard it? Maybe in his town administrator report section, which is, what, 5 to 10 minutes of a town council meeting?
Yeah, yeah.
Or the superintendent's report is 5 to 10 minutes of the school committee meeting, respectfully? those stories, the behind the scenes, the rest of the story, to pick up on another line of a famous broadcaster, those are the things that I think bring value to us as Franklin residents, because we're all in it. Let's find out what's going on.
And so many things, I think, can be solved on a town basis.
Yes.
Particularly in this community. I think this community is particularly ripe in embracing to look how to resolve or expand the problems of the town mm-hmm. to be resolved.
Sure.
And to find some way of addressing them.
Yeah. And one key piece as an example, and just one recent as an example, certainly the instance and the creation almost 6 years ago of the SAFE Coalition.
Yes.
Which we know today as the SAFE Coalition. 6 years ago, it was a meeting, 300 people showed up, a couple of people jumped up on stage, and then 6 years later, now you've got this wealth of resources that are providing and addressing mental health resources, substance abuse resources. Narcan is heavily available. Narcan training is available. And they're expanding to meet the needs of this issue. That is just one example. There can be dozens, but that's just one.
One of my concerns, I'm a graduate of Bentley College with a BS in accounting. So money, follow the money.
Follow the money. That's what I attempt to do, yes.
One of my concerns is that with this Great American Rescue Plan, with the Trump plan, with the coronavirus, there's a lot of money being given to like the SAFE Coalition types of organizations and other organizations that in 2023, I think is going to disappear and begin to disappear. And so these organizations are not only facing a challenge of how the grants are written, mm-hmm. But what is going to be sustainable without follow-up types of grants? Mm-hmm. And in what way can they form a business plan that will work? And I think, again, the SAFE Coalition is probably a leader in designing how to do that.
Yeah, and there's other organizations. I know even the food pantry. I had been on the board a number of years ago for a good number of years, and then stepped back for other reasons. They don't get town funding. They're totally sustaining on donations, et cetera, and grants to the extent that they can get those. And yet food security or insecurity is certainly an issue, particularly as the pandemic has coming. And yeah, there are federal funds to help, but then those will go away. So it's an issue. Absolutely.
Do you know the food pantry came out of the Interfaith Council? The Interfaith Council created the food pantry, and then Linda and Paul Puglio, who were very involved with it, moved it to a non-sectarian, strictly non-profit organization. Mm-hmm. But again, if you look back, the Interfaith Council just had their traditional Thanksgiving service.
Right.
That body has, behind the scenes,
done a lot.
Really done a lot, mm-hmm. and spoken a number of times as a single voice.
Yeah, and to that end, people may remember back in, I think it was January, February, and March, it was the Interfaith Council had coordinated a calendar to do two things. One, by buying meals takeout, yes. at several restaurants in and around Franklin, that a portion of those proceeds would also go to the food pantry. So the Interfaith Council hasn't forgotten the food pantry. They're still contributing in ways they can, however they can, to that end. So, yeah, we appreciate that work.
Well, Steve and I, we're kind of wrapping up this three-part series. But if there's a subject or a program that you would, for whatever strange reason, like us to discuss or you want to be a part of, you can always reach Steve, right?
Absolutely, or right through the studio itself. I think we've talked about info@franklin.tv or info@wfpr.fm. Those email addresses available to provide feedback. And yes, I know Pete has also, in a number of cases, and I've certainly advertised at the end of all my podcasts for those who listen, we can't do this alone. We can always use your help. So if you do have an idea, if you do have a thought, if you do want to run your own show, this is what the studio is for, part of it.
And if you missed our first two shows, tell them how they can see it, Steve.
Yeah, once they get broadcast, the links will be available via WFPR.fm. They'll be available via podcast. So it'll be available through any number of apps on Franklin Matters. They'll be tagged with Franklin Matters Radio. If we want to crush Brandon, put them out through Frank's Presents. I think Frank Presents has a separate podcast as well. Right. We can send them out through those channels as well. So you'll have two ways to get at the same story. So thank you, Frank, for taking time in these three sessions. And thank you, the listeners, for tapping in and listening to us. And hopefully you'll provide some feedback. And maybe there'll be a question we can noodle on for next time around.
Thank you very much, Steve. And thank you for the listening public to turn into this program. I really appreciate it.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.